Hello, my name is Nyamka, and I want to thank you so much for joining me for my podcast, Rebranded Christianity. And the title of the teaching for this podcast is Gandhi's Rejection: Divorcing the Legacy of Racism Among White Christians. And this is part four of a four-part series. So if you haven't listened to the first three installments of the series, I think it's a great idea if you go back and check out parts one through three, because each installment builds upon the other and it's leading to this final part that I'm going to be discussing today. So the final part of this four-part series is discussing ways that a person can disengage the culture of racism in the white Christian community. Now, before I get into the teaching for this podcast, I do want to plug some other things that I'm working on that I would really like for you to check out. I have a web-based television program. It's called 50 Faith Motivate, and it's available on YouTube and Vimeo. So, the purpose of the web-based television program, 50 Faith Motivate, is to just give you quick 1 to 3 minute PowerPoints that where I take like the physical world around us and things that have happened in our environment, and I just get pr just extract a spiritual lesson from that. I think they're pretty cool segments, if I must say so myself. A lot of them are filmed either here in New York, where I live at, or in Chicago, my hometown. So when you get the opportunity, I would love for you to check that out. It's on YouTube under the username Nyamka Ward, no spaces. And then also it's on Vimeo at vimeo.com/Nyamka Ward. Now, I also do have a blog. The blog is called A Christian Girl in Her Carnal World: Contemplative Stories of Faith Intertwined with Life in Urban America. So the blog is a series of autobiographical short stories telling the life of a woman that the woman being me, the woman, a woman, a girl, woman, teenager. It's just different stages of my life growing up in cosmopolitan big city USA. And what inspired me to do this blog is that I believe that the Christian community doesn't speak to, it's not really ministering to on the stories of faith of people that live in not in inner city neighborhoods, but in cosmopolitan big city, professional, eclectic, neighborhoods, where really religion is not so much welcome because it's viewed as in sort of antagonistic to the concept of freedom and diversity and inclusiveness that are in these environments. So this blog is discussing growing up and living in these environments, in these big urban areas, and being a person of faith. And how does that look? How does it look to be a cosmopolitan, urban, savvy Christian? So that's what the blog is about. And the website is nyamka.wordpress.com. So I would love for you to check that out when you have the opportunity. And finally, you're listening to this podcast, Rebranded Christianity. And if you have not subscribed to the podcast, I would love for you to do so. You can subscribe to through the podcast website itself, which is nyamkaw.podomatic.com, or you can go subscribe through iTunes. If you think that what I'm saying is going to be a blessing or enlightening to someone, or even, dare I say, entertaining, I would love for you also to forward this podcast over to your friends, your family, or even your colleagues. So let's jump into the final part of Gandhi's Rejection. And as I stated, this part is discussing ways that a person can disengage the culture of racism in the white Christian community, so to fully divorce this legacy on a personal level. And I want to start off by discussing the first way, and that is to talk about a word that I spoke about earlier, and that word is justification. I would definitely say that the greatest deception with racism and racial discrimination is that a person believes that they are justified to be a racist. People believe that they are justified tried to practice racial discrimination and have racial prejudice in their hearts. As I stated earlier, at the beginning of the Western Church, Europeans or white Christians thought that they were justified to discriminate against the Jews. And the reasoning that they have for their justification and what their theory was that the Jews killed Jesus, so therefore they were justified to practice if you study church history, the early church after the apostles died and the Europeans took over the church and the spread of Christianity from the Jews, if you study that history, as I talked about in earlier installments, you will see that the church practiced such heinous and violent discrimination against Jewish people. And the root of that was this concept of being justified to do it. And if you look at the whole story of Jesus's crucifixion, you will see that there were other people involved in this crucifixion process, and the other people were the Romans, and the Romans were Europeans. They were white people. But when deception is being sort of played out in our minds and in our hearts, the whole story is not really presented to us when we're in the process of being deceived. So one of the things I want to sidestep real quick and say something. When a thought process is coming into a person's mind to attribute somebody's race or their ethnicity to their negative behavior. So when you are thinking that a person is doing this negative thing because they're black, because they're Jewish, because they're Asian, because they're Middle Eastern, you can bet your bottom dollar that the inspiration of that type of thought process is diabolical. It's coming from the kingdom of darkness, because that is not what the Bible says is the root cause of a person's actions. The Bible says that who we are, what we're doing, what we're saying, everything that is coming forth from a person is a product of their heart. Not the color of their skin. The color of a person's skin is merely a biological thing. It has nothing to do with why this person is doing what they're doing. So I would just say that if you have those thoughts and you're walking in this thought process as a habit, as a way of life, that you're connecting what a person is doing and you're saying the reason why they're doing what they're doing is because because of the race that they belong to, that thought process came from the kingdom of darkness. It did not come from God. When the devil is seeking to deceive someone, he never presents the whole story. It is always slanted in the direction that leads to the destruction that he intends. When it comes to deceiving people to be racist or practice racial discrimination, the scheme is to negatively categorize a group of people. In reality, ugly truths apply to every people group in this world. So if you are hating or discriminating against a people or a people of another race, you should actually just really be a person that hates and discriminates against everybody. You should hate and discriminate against the race of people you belong to, because there's not a people group on this earth at this time that has not committed heinous crimes against humanity. And for the purpose of this podcast and dealing with the concept of racism among white Christians, if I am a person that I know modern world history, if I'm a white person that I know modern world history, there is no reason for, if I'm speaking hypothetically as if I was a white person that had knowledge of modern world history, there would be no reason at all for me to turn around and to have a negative attitude towards people that are of African descent, people that are of Middle Eastern descent, people that are of Jewish descent, and so on. There's no reason for that, because of what has happened, at what humanity has suffered in this world at the hands due to European imperialism and European colonization, and how that has totally affected this world up until this day. And this is just facts. These are truths of the world that we're living in. there's no reason why I would have a negative attitude towards any other people group without having that own negative attitude towards my own ethnicity. And the only reason why a white person would have this negative attitude towards other people groups is just sheerly because of deception from the enemy. Because in reality, you're not justified to have that attitude towards other people groups without having that attitude towards your own people group. So it's just a perfect example of how the enemy presents, he slants things to people, he does not tell the whole story, and he's hoping that his deception finds a place in our hearts. The devil loves division and strife because that gets people out of walking in God's love and causes destruction. Therefore, one of his aims and one of his main aims is to deceive people into pitting themselves against each other through the idea of justification. And as I talked about in an earlier installment, if you are a Christian person and you are not walking in the love of God, Christianity is a faith. It's not a religion. Jesus never intended for the people that were saying they are his followers and saying that they are his disciples to turn into religious people. That was not the intent. But I will tell you what will make someone who is saying they are a disciple of Jesus Christ, what will cause them to become a religious person, which will cause them to be a hypocrite and will cause them to be a person that no one wants to be around. What will cause that to happen is that a person who is not walking in the love of God, because the love of God is the power of Christianity. It is the defining characteristic of Christianity, is the love of God. But if you have racism and prejudice in your heart towards people, which is nothing but a form of strife and division, you could not be walking in the love of God. It's not possible. You are merely a religious person, and trust me, you are turning people away from God by the droves. And that's what the enemy is seeking to do. That's why he's always finding a way to get people into division and strife with other people. And racism is one of his main and most successful tools of division and strife. And it has caused the church in modern world history to be so severely undermined. And if we could get away from this concept that we are justified to be racist, that we're justified to practice racial discrimination or segregation in our lives, I just believe that there's so much power and so much just the tangible presence of God that will just invade the environments and spaces that we live in and affect the world around us on a much greater level that is reminiscent to the early church that was led by the apostles. So just, I want to stress this and hit this point home. There's absolutely no justification for being a racist. There's no justification for practicing racial discrimination or segregation in your life or holding racial prejudice and stereotypes in your heart. In God's eyes, there is no justification for that. Don't take that bait. And just a side note here, I want to make sure that I'm very clear about how the context of which I'm using the word segregation. When we think about segregation, at least here in the United States, and I know people also think about the segregation that was very prominent in the media in South Africa, but that's like corporate level, that's institutional segregation. I'm talking about what is happening today, since that type of segregation has been outlawed, is no longer legally acceptable or openly culturally acceptable. The type of segregation that I'm referring to is personal segregation. And I discussed this earlier as well, I believe in part one of the series, going to churches here in New York, and I would watch people week after week at church, at a particular church that I went to, and I saw this in a number of churches here. No one would expect that to be here in New York in this quote, this quote unquote cultural melting pot. But the cultural melting pot is way more on a sort of a residential level. It's not as much on a sort of a social interaction level as the presentation leads you to believe. But what the type of segregation that I'm referring to is when a person is segregating themselves from people, that their lives are segregated from people that are not of their race or their ethnicity. So as I talked about in part one of this series, I watched at churches week after week here in New York where you would have people that they would even be creating fellowship relationships after church, and they would not fellowship with someone that was not their ethnicity. And that is what the type of segregation that I'm referring to. That's personal segregation, where if I look at your life and the people that you are hanging with behind closed doors, your most intimate friends, I'm more than likely going to see that all of those people are of your same ethnic group. And you can say, well, you know, I just, the neighborhood that I'm in or the community that I'm in, or you know what I watched here in New York, what I observed is that is a lie. You are everybody in your life that's your close friends. I'm not talking about the people that you have water cooler relationships with, that you talk to during the course of ministry work that you're doing together. I'm talking about the people that they are getting the personal invites to come over to your house for dinner. They're getting the invites to hang out with you after church is over with, during the week and on the weekends. I noticed here in New York, it was very prevalent that there was so much personal social segregation going on. And that is the type of segregation that I'm referring to in this particular installment of this podcast. Now, the next way that I want to talk about how a person can disengage the culture of racism in the white Christian community is understanding is through this statement. People are not the color of their skin, but the content of their hearts. And I'm going to say it again. People are not the color of their skin, but the content of their hearts. And I know that if you know the so many amazing quotes from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., that this is one of those quotes from him that gets so much attention, that he wanted to see a day in the United States where his children would be judged not according to the color of their skin, but according to the content of their hearts. And I can't, it's going back to the concept of deception that I discussed when we were dealing with the word justification. This system or this culture that we have in place, this racist culture, where people are being who you are and what you're doing is so attached to how you look that, man, it's amazing to me to see how something that is so insane is practiced with such a degree of normalcy when the devil has deceived people. That the amount of basically pigmentation in your skin or the lack thereof is being attached to who you are and what you think and why you're doing what you're doing. It blows my mind that is so prevalent in the Christian community. And dare I say that it was the church that really is the culprit behind the majority of the racist behavior and practices in the Western world. It was the church but not Jesus. I want to make sure I separate Jesus and the philosophy of Jesus Christ from these ungodly practices in Christian culture that have nothing to do with God, nothing to do with the Bible, and nothing to do with the message of Jesus Christ. And I just remember about 5 or 6 years ago, I was getting to know a group of people, a group of brothers and sisters. This was the group of people, they were all white. They were to me like really hip, just a hip group of children of God that I just wanted to hang out with and get to know. And, One of the downsides, but it was just a trend that I started to see in the Christian community, was that they were constantly attaching things that I would do to the color of my skin. And it was just anything that I did that was different from what how they would do things, or maybe they thought it peculiar or interesting. It would always go back to the fact that I was doing these things because I was black. And it happened so much that I just said, you know, I know that the Bible tells us that who a person is the content of their heart. Now, I know that there are culture, you know, that there, you know, there are cultural practices, and that there are cultural norms. And I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about in the situation that I was in, anything that I did that was different than how they did it, or if they thought it was peculiar or interesting or humorous, it was constantly that I was doing these things because I was black. And, it goes back to this statement that people are not the color of their skin, but the content of their hearts. So let's look at some verses in the Bible that talk about that God wants us to view people and interact with people according to how this statement is outlining it. It says that we're supposed to imitate God as his dear children. Okay, so in the book of 1 Samuel, chapter 16, verse 7, it says, God told the prophet Samuel that he does not judge by the outward appearance, but he looks at the heart. Look at how just to the point, how direct that is to undermine this culture of saying that a person is doing this or that because of their race. Let's go to the next verse. Jesus was described in the book of Isaiah, chapter 11, verse 3, that he would not judge by what he sees. Jesus himself instructed people in the Gospel of John, chapter 7, verse 24, to not judge based on appearances so that their judgments would be correct. Okay, so let's invert that last verse. If by not judging by appearances, your judgment would be correct. If you are judging by appearances, that means that you are basically, your judgment is in error, or more than likely, you are in error by drawing the conclusion that you're drawing based upon what you see. It is an ungodly character trait and practice to determine who a person is, what they are thinking, what their actions will be, or why they did what they did based on anything other than what is in their heart. In the book of Proverbs, chapter 4, verse 23, it says, "Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it." This is a biblical truth and should guide how we interact with people. But it is absolutely countercultural because we are socialized to pass judgments on people based on their appearances. But the Bible makes it clear that God is not behind that behavior. So if God is not behind that behavior, guess who is? The content of a person's heart tells you who they are, not their race and not their ethnicity. So allow people, give people the time, give people the space, give people the opportunity to reveal their heart to you. Or if you're in a situation where you're interacting with somebody and you really need to sort of figure out what angle this person is coming from, instead of trying to draw conclusions based upon racial stereotypes and prejudice that you have in your heart, why don't you ask the Holy Spirit to give you insight into a person to help you engage them? But stop taking the devil's bait and determining who a person is based on the color of their skin. The final point that I want to discuss about individual ways a person can divorce the legacy of white racism in the Christian community involves denouncing the ideology of white supremacy. And I want to say that again. This final point is discussing how on an individual level you have to denounce the ideology of white supremacy. Now, before I proceed with this, I want to point out something and I want to make it very clear. When I say the words white supremacy, that may conjure up thoughts of the KKK, neo-Nazis, white Aryan nation, or similar organizations. Okay, but white supremacy is a philosophy. It's an ideology that, as I stated earlier, believes that white people, from their appearance to their culture, are superior to everyone else and therefore are justified to have preeminent positions over people of other races, economically, politically, and so on. This philosophy was also used as the justification for mistreatment of other races of people, racist laws, and institutions. White supremacist organizations came forth from this philosophy. Okay, these type of the KKK, the neo-Nazis, the Aryan Nation, they came forth. This philosophy is what produced those type of organizations and not the inverse. Okay, but these type of organizations, this philosophy caused them to be created, but they became more extreme, extreme versions of this philosophy. But in and of itself, white supremacy is an everyday ideology that has been governing this world for centuries because of European imperialism, colonization, and the effects of those major occurrences in modern world history. And the agent that legitimized this philosophy for centuries was the Western Church, beginning in Europe and in the United States. So what I really want to make sure it comes across to you is that when we are denouncing as a white Christian, when you are denouncing the philosophy of white supremacy, you are basically saying that in the way that you interact with people on a day-to-day basis, people of other races, you are not going to, by denouncing white supremacy, that means you're not going to interact with other people as if you innately have a superior position over them or you're superior to them because you are a white person. And what I'm going to discuss some examples of my personal interactions with white supremacy in the church. But, and what I want these examples to show is how deeply embedded in people we take things, we think sometimes on such a shallow level. But when you are dealing with something, when you're dealing with a philosophy, when you're dealing with a belief system that has been so deeply ingrained in our culture, in Western culture, and not just Western culture, this has affected the world because of European imperialism and colonization. But specifically when we're in the United States is a country that the culture is a Western culture. So in Western culture, the white supremacy philosophy is so deeply embedded in this culture that people don't even know how they're affected by it on an everyday basis when they are interacting with people that they're not white. They don't know that until, I mean, something happens that you are peeling back layers and layers and layers and you are really seeing what is in the core of your heart. So I want to share with you some situations where I witnessed white supremacy in the Christian community. So the first few situations I want to talk about comes through missionaries. So as I discussed, I believe that was in part two of this, I discussed Gandhi's his experiences with white missionaries in India. Well, around the time of colonization, when European countries were sending white missionaries to India, to Africa, to Asia, to the Americas, one of the prominent issues that paperwork and documents from these missionaries, they were white supremacists. They were racist. And one of the reasons why Gandhi rejected Christianity was because he saw how these missionaries were treating Indian people in India, that they were relating to them as if these people were inferior to them. Now, back in that time, you could be more overt about that type of that way. I mean, it was so bad that they had, these Europeans thought that they should take a vote to determine if non-European people could even be allowed to be Christians. I mean, that's how messed up their minds were to even think that you need to take a vote that somebody should be a Christian. But if you fast forward to today, we don't live in a society where you can be overt with your racism today. It has to be practiced in a covert method so that no one can easily, or you're not making what's in your heart that you know is a vice now. You're not making that so clear to other people. You're doing it in a way that someone has to watch you over a period of time to see what is going on, what's truly going on in your heart. About 12 years ago, I was I attended a church in Chicago, on the west side of Chicago, that was in a very bad neighborhood in that city, on the west side of that city. But this church truly was a light in the darkness of this neighborhood. And this church was very given to urban missions. And there were white people that came to this church from all over the United States, from, you know, and definitely not from the same type of neighborhoods that this church was in. They were coming from small towns. They were coming from suburban areas, and they had basically sacrificed that sort of comfortable atmosphere to come to, and to be urban missionaries in this tough inner city neighborhood in Chicago. And you would think that someone that was doing something like that, you would truly believe that they were not racist. It was just, it's not possible for someone to basically give up this comfortable, pretty much homogenous lifestyle to come to this tough, all black, just about all black, inner city neighborhood in Chicago, right? Well, actually, you would be incorrect. And similar to the attitude of the missionaries from, you know, back in the days of colonization, these white people that I encountered at this church that was given to urban missions, their position was that they were helping these black people from the position that these black people were inferior to them and that they were not equals to them. And I was recently listening to a song by one of my favorite artists. His name is Lecrae, and the song is called Dirty Water. And in the song, Lecrae says, champagne, we're celebrating a well that we dug in West Africa, but how many of your friends are African? And when I heard that line, I just said to myself, oh my gosh, that is so true. This is what I saw at this church, that it was just, they were the white people that had come there to be urban missionaries. They were relating to the black people in this church, and just black people in general, as if they were inferior to them, that they were not equals, that if they thought that there was a way something should be done, they didn't take it too lightly for a black person to disagree with them, because they didn't feel that black people were in a position to even sort of intellectually spar with them. So that was when I saw that at the time, not knowing everything that I've known about the history of racism among white missionaries, when they are in pockets around other races during their missionary work, giving what I know today, I see the pattern of behavior, that the mentality isn't changing, but how it's carried out how it's sort of exposed and how it's practiced is very different now than how it may have been maybe, 100 years ago. My second example of this was encountering a white missionary here in New York City. So he's a missionary over in Africa, and he's based here in New York, the last time that I talked to him. And once again, now because I'm interacting with him after I had this experience at that church on the west side of Chicago, his behavior, it'll always throw me off because I still, it's still crazy to me. But once again, it was his behavior was, I'm not personally, I don't want to have personal relationships with black people. Yes, I'm a missionary in Africa, but those people need my help. I'm here to help you, but I'm not here to personally interact with you because you're not on my level. I view you as an inferior person to me. Why are you talking to me? And when I tell you that I encountered, this was like just about blatant racial discrimination from this missionary. He was a missionary in Africa. And just to see this type of behavior once again, that I'm helping you. I do help black people. I don't have a problem with that. But when it comes to my personal relationships, when it comes to who I interact with behind closed doors, you will not see any black people in that group. And that was that the missionary behavior was one of the ways that one of the ways, but it's not the only way that I experienced white supremacy in the church. One of the most disturbing experiences that I've had with white supremacy among white Christians actually came through a friendship. So this situation was similar to how it came upon me and sort of shocked me. It's similar to the Donald Sterling situation in the sense that if you're someone in the public and you're looking from the outside into his life, you see that one, he owns an organization where he one has black people, or he owned an organization where he had black people in leader front office leadership positions. So the first thing is that if you know about the history of American sports, major American sports, after they allowed black people to even play in those leagues, one of the things that they maintained a severe discrimination blockage on was front office positions. So general manager, president, head coach, they would not allow black people into those positions even after they allowed black athletes to play in those leagues. Well, Donald Sterling, he had a black general manager. He's had black head coaches of the Clippers. So that is a major, that's pretty major in the world of major American professional sports. Also, his girlfriend, the woman that he made these heinously racist comments to, she is half black. So here you have this man who is exposed that something happened that, or a series of things have happened that expose the racism that was in his heart. Where if you were looking at his life from the outside looking in, half his girlfriend is half black. He's giving leadership positions within his organization to black people. You would never think that he had these racist views in his heart. And similar to that was my friend who I experienced her white supremacist views. If you looked at her lifestyle and her life from the outside looking in, she had a very diverse crowd of people around her. She was into, you know, she was very much a cosmopolitan and eclectic white Christian woman. So what happened was that the first thing that happened was that she revealed to me that she thought that white women, period, because they are white, are more attractive than black women, that it had nothing to do with actual attractiveness. She just believed that because of her white skin, she was more attractive than a black woman. And this came out because something happened between us regarding a man, and she was just surprised that this man paid attention to me, a black woman, over her, a white woman. And gosh, when this happened, this is a Christian woman. I would never think that she would have this type of view in her heart. And this was my friend. And so it was really saddening. And I remember being in college, in an advertising class when the professor told us a study where the study discovered that white women do think that they thought that the least attractive white woman was still more attractive than a black woman, period. So I had known about this white supremacist belief. I'd known about it from college, but I didn't expect that my friend would carry these views in her heart. So, and like I said, she wasn't a member of the KKK. She didn't have a swastika tattooed on her back. She had a diverse crowd of people in her social circle. From all appearances, she was the perfect picture of a cosmopolitan Christian. Racism didn't seem to fit into her equation at all. Her having this view, it totally contradicted the presentation of her life. And you know what? To me, she's similar to the irony of racism in the northern United States or the North when there was a great divide between the North and the South. The North they wanted slavery to be abolished. However, the majority of the northern states had racist laws. And I'm talking about from the East Coast to the West Coast to the middle, the Midwest. These were states that they wanted slavery to be abolished, but yet they had racist laws, they had black codes, they had legalized racial segregation, they had institutional racism. So on one hand, they saw the immorality or the that they saw that slavery was immoral, but they didn't see the immorality of white supremacy. They believe that even though a person should not be held in captivity like they're animal, even though that they believe that black people were not equal to white people. They believe that white people had a position of supremacy over a black person. And this was how my friend was sort of the personification of that mentality of the northern United States when it was the North versus the South. She had this lifestyle of sort of inclusiveness, but she still, when something happened that was able to expose a core belief in her heart, it showed that she still had white supremacy in her heart. I had another incident with this friend, and this incident involved how you racially classify an interracial person. And if the history of the United States, you've heard of the term the one drop rule. The one drop rule comes from the days of slavery when the government or governments on every level wanted to basically figure out a way legally that a white man that was having children with African slave women could disown those children. And so that those children did not have a right to their father's assets. And the way that they did that was they just created the one drop rule. And the one drop rule says that if you have, I believe it's 1/16th of African blood, you are entirely black. And so that law, which because it was sustained for so long, it created a culture. And today it is, in essence, it defines what is black in the United States. That pretty much anyone that is a descendant of African slaves in the United States is that's considered that's the people that are identified as black Americans. And that comes from the one drop rule. Well, what that rule did was that it said that even though you have a white parent, because of this one drop rule, that essentially that parent has nothing to do with your life. They have nothing to do with who you are. They have nothing to do with how you are defined as a person. Your being is entirely attached to your African heritage, to your black parent. Okay, so it was not, this rule was not created to basically fortify black pride or pride in your African heritage at a time when it was being put down. No, that is not why this rule was created. This rule was created so that a white man could disown the children that he was having with an African slave woman or with just an African woman that was in a position of servitude or subjugated to him. It was very racist, and it was very much coming from the concept of white supremacy. Okay, so going back to this sort of second major incident with my friend, where white supremacy is being exposed in her heart to me, the situation comes up with, how do you classify an interracial person and a person that's black and they're white? And pretty much she made it clear to me that she believes in this, the philosophy behind this one drop rule, that a person who has black parents, who has a person who has a black parent and a white parent, that person has no right to say that they're white. They have no right, really, they shouldn't even be calling themselves mixed. They should say that they're black. On the sort of like, so it was okay for that person to entirely align themselves with their African heritage, but she saw it as something wrong that you have no right to align yourself with your European heritage. And that's white supremacy. That, listen, you have that African blood in you. Don't you dare try to claim your European heritage, your European ancestors. Don't you dare try to do that. And that was something that she held in her heart. And it just, when she, when we, when we had this conversation, and this happened a few times where we had a conversation along this line, it just, I mean, it just, it really did, it blew me out the water because it showed how deeply embedded these racist philosophies can be in a person's heart. It's like a detective in a case who is having to keep peeling back layers until he finds the evidence that he needs to crack the case. And it's just, it's the reason why I make these points to you is because white supremacy is, it's, it can be so deeply ingrained in how we view this world that you have to hit that chord that shows that, you know what? My heart is not as pure as I think it is. And I can say that even on a personal level relating to myself, that I've had things that have happened to me recently, and my responses to those occurrences have shown me that, you know what, I'm not where I think I'm at, and there are things going on the inside of me that I need to deal with. And that's what I mean when I say denouncing, that you have to denounce the philosophy of white supremacy. You have to see that you, if as a white person, you are not better than anyone else, that God has not given you a position over other people in this world, and there is nothing about you physically, there's nothing about the European culture, the European heritage that makes you better than anyone else. And inversely, no one else is better than you. In God's eyes, we are all equal. Now, I've had other instances since this particular friend where I had these shocking experiences with her white supremacist views. She did not desensitize me to the occurrence of it, but instead she made me realize that you could have someone that's presenting themselves as all inclusive and diverse, and something happens to show you that they're not as inclusive and as a diversity minded as they're presenting themselves to be, or even as they think that they are. So I've had a few more incidents with white supremacy, with some white female friends that I've had. And these particular friends were in interracial relationships. And that's really not a shocker. I don't even know why I say that as a shock, because there have been so many incidents of people that are involved in interracial relationships and they are very racist. For some reason, they're not viewing that with the person that they're dealing with. But a lot of times it comes out when they have children or something like that, where or they have to interact with the people of their significant other's families. And then you begin to see that they're having racist views in their heart. But I've had more experiences with white supremacy amongst my white Christian friends, and like a similar to the friend that I'm discussing these examples from, nothing about their lives would have led you to believe that they had these views in their hearts, where they believe that there are just situations where white people are superior to people of other races. Now I want to talk about I want to talk about a subject that comes up. It comes up so often lately that truly shows how deeply embedded white supremacy is in the Western church, and specifically in the American church. So on a larger collective scale, this particular message to me is indicative of the deep roots of white supremacy in the American church. And it is when I hear Christians say that America was established as a Christian nation. That when I hear that statement, that America was established as a Christian nation, that totally hits home to me how strong the message of white supremacy is in people's hearts to say something like that. For someone to think that this country was founded by a Christian man. The changes that are happening in our modern culture, people believe they're taking us away from our Christian roots. I've heard people say that the changes that are happening in our modern culture are taking us away from our Christian roots. And let me point out something. Someone that has grown up in the church, when I was growing up and attending Black American churches, I've never heard that rhetoric. Never. It wasn't until I started attending churches that were predominantly white churches, I began to hear that rhetoric from white ministers. I want to make this very clear. To associate Jesus Christ, the central message of Jesus Christ, that love for others would be the proof that a person is his disciple and the foundational message of Christianity, love God, love your neighbor, the golden rule, to connect these elements with the quote-unquote founding of this country and the murderous, violent, oppressive elements intertwined with the establishment of this country just radiates the stronghold of the ideology of white supremacy in the American church. The fact that in the 21st century, people are still saying this is beyond me. It is amazing to me that someone could think that a country with the history that it has, that how the United States came about and what has occurred in his hi in the history of this country up until recent times, to think that this country was a Christian nation, that we need to go back to our Christian roots, to associate Jesus Christ with the events and the laws and the customs and the institutions in this country, that the only way you could do that is that you are white supremacy. The philosophy of white supremacy has to be so strong in your heart to think that that Jesus Christ is connected to the founding, that he was glorified in the founding of this country. And I'm not a US basher. I'm not a person that I hate the United States. I'm not anti-American. Please do not associate that with me. These are simply the facts. I'm not a US basher, but I'm also not a person that goes around thinking that this country is better than everyone else's country. I am American. I'm not better than anybody. I'm not less than anybody. I'm simply an American. I'm like a 10th generation American. My heritage in the United States goes back a long ways. However, I will not compromise the truth. I will not ignore facts to protect the integrity of error. And I will not walk around disturbingly delusional because of patriotic pride. Now, one of the things that I'm not going to do for this podcast teaching is we could go into the background of the founding fathers. We can get very extremely in depth into the history of the United States. I'm not going to do that. But what I will tell you is this. There's a lot of information out there to overturn this belief thing that this country was established as a Christian nation. It was religious, maybe, yes, but not Christian. The law of love, the central element of Christianity has never been practiced in this country. It has never been the center point of this country at any point in its history, in its past, or in its present. There are some specific resources that I can point you to that I think are really great resources that dispel this ridiculous myth that this country was a Christian nation. One of them is a book called Zenith 2016 by Tom Horn, and there's a documentary. It's available on YouTube called The Hidden Faith of the Founding Fathers. So those are two resources that I recommend that you check out if you really want to really get into what's really behind or what really was behind the founding of the United States. And I'm going to use that quote unquote because we know that this country was not founded by people from Europe. There were already people living here when the Europeans came over here. But to say that Jesus Christ, please don't ever think that the person of Jesus Christ was being personified in a land where governments on every level sanctioned people having their lands and lives stolen from them, sanctioned people being murdered and raped and kidnapped and held in captivity and oppressed because of the color of their skin and told that they were less than human beings. Please don't associate Jesus Christ with those type of roots. Jesus said, the thief does not come except to steal and to kill and destroy. But he said, I have come that you may have life and that you may have it more abundantly. And that is the famous verse in the Gospel of John, chapter 10, verse 10, where Jesus distinguishes the fruit of his presence and the fruit of his being from the evidence of the work of the enemy. Now, I am constantly hearing ministers that are so grieved about the sexual immorality that is so prevalent in our culture today. And these ministers, they want us to go back to our Christian roots. They want us to go back to the good old days. And I think to myself when I hear this, when I hear Christian ministers say, you know, we need to go back to the good old days. When I hear that, I'm thinking, so you want to go back to a time when I wasn't even considered a person. You want to go back to a time when more than likely I would be a servant in someone's house. I could be raped by the man in that house and nothing could be done about it because in the eyes of the legal system, I'm not even a person. But you want to go back to those days. You want to go back to the good old days of America's vibrant Christian past. You know how horrible that sounds? But the only way that someone could think about that is that you have the philosophy of white supremacy in your heart. It has never been a part of the culture of this country to adhere to the great commandments of Christianity, the defining elements of Christianity, love God and love your neighbor as yourself. Preeminent immorality is to violate the law of love. That is at the root of all immorality, that people don't love God and subsequently they don't love their neighbor as themselves. And I look at America's past and present from that perspective. At no point do I see a country that exemplifies the great commandments of Christianity. So people are picking the evil they want to align with. If you want to go back to the time when people were required, according to cultural customs, to live by the biblical codes of sexual morality, if you want to go back to that that time, then you're also going back to a time when people were being violently discriminated against and violently oppressed because of their race and because of their gender. So why would you want to go back to that time? And for the people that are, that they love this new America, that's one that is really trying to forge an America where everyone has a right to pursue the American dream, where they want to exemplify the law of love. Well, to be honest with you, that type of America also has discrimination in it, because if you don't agree with everything that involves the sort of the culture of our country today, you will be discriminated against. So there's hypocrisy there. But at the end of the day, in either scenario, whether you wanted to go back to America's racist and discriminatory past, or you want to live in America's sort of love everybody, if you don't love everybody, you're going to get discriminated against present, the law of love is sort of being violated either way. So the message of Christ is being sort of stifled. And something that should be flowing like water rushing from a waterfall, the love of God, that is so powerful, that is so vibrant, that is, it causes the Christian faith to be so vibrant because of the church backing customs and institutions and laws that violate the law of love. They have caused this vibrant faith to be, to sort of look so just something that should look like it's coming out of a waterfall is looking like drops coming that are dropping out of a faucet that has been turned off. And this is just the residue of that water. And by walking in the love of God, it causes us to be the vibrant church, to be the vibrant faith that we're supposed to be. And one of the things that we have to get away from, we have to denounce the philosophy of white supremacy. And it has to be denounced and it has to be renounced in every possible way on a personal level. And it also has to be renounced on a corporate level. Stop saying that this country was established as a Christian nation. You cannot say that in the light of the violent mistreatment that people have been subjected to in this country from its very inception. Please get that out of your hearts. It's not true. And we have to see something that if the Christian church is to have an impactful and prominent role in America's future, and furthermore, in the Western world, it will be because of Christians authentically walking in God's love. And as long as there is racism and racial discrimination and racial segregation and white supremacy operating in the Christian community and in people's hearts, the law of love is being violated. It is time to completely denounce all these evils. There is no justification for it. It is ungodly and immoral. The time is right now at the heart level, through prayerfully seeking the help of the Holy Spirit, to cast off racism in every form, covert, overt, discrimination, segregation in every area of your life, and to cast off the ideology of white supremacy. It is time right now to denounce these evils and let them go, so that as a community of Christians, we can finally start radiating the presence of Jesus Christ in this country and partner with Jesus to fulfill God's purposes in our society. And that concludes this podcast. So I want to thank you so much for listening to Gandhi's Rejection, Part 4. This is Nyamka, and this podcast is Rebranded Christianity, and I look forward to you joining me for the next segment, and I hope that you have a wonderful day.